Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, yesterday, President Trump fulfilled a promise to the American people. But by so doing, he has been condemned by the Pope. He has been threatened by the global elite. Hollywood has gone ballistic. And the Weather Channel, of all people, according to the headlines, have gone apocalyptic. And these are just a few of the headlines, by the way. You'd say, what in the world's all this about? Well, in a moment, we're going to play a short clip from the president's speech yesterday, and we're going to deal with this issue in the first segment here today. And with that, I welcome you to the program. I'm Sam Rohr, joined today by Dave Kistler. And then we're going to be joined by a special guest in the balance of the program, and actually we'll bring him in here in this first segment as well, our special guest, Leo Homan. He is news editor for WorldNet Daily, and he is author of the book entitled Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement. And in segment two, with him, we're going to examine a shocking, get this, a shocking reinstatement of massive increases in refugees approved by, guess who? The Trump State Department. And then we're going to consider whether or not an imminent Manchester, England-type bombing is possible, imminent here in the United States. And we're going to look at also the role that American mosques are playing in this potential. But then we're going to go in our solutions segment at the end by giving some very sound practical advice on how all of us, all of you listening to the program today, how we can recognize and respond to the massive Islamic propaganda lies that are being propagated on the American people, starting with the lie that, well, don't we all, after all, serve the same God? That's where we're going to go. So let's go back right now to the short clip of what the president said yesterday and announced in the Rose Garden, which has created really an amazing response, both right and left. We play it, Russ.
We're following through on our commitments, and I don't want anything to get in our way. I am fighting every day for the great people of this country. Therefore, in order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord Thank you. Thank you. But begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers. So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate, and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine.
If we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine. Dave, what a way to end that statement. And that was about a 24-minute presentation yesterday, but you heard just a few things there. Now, the friends that were sitting in the Rose Garden that were applauding, mostly business people and others who have been negatively impacted by the agreement that President Obama put into place. But it's an amazing thing, Dave. The American workers have hailed it. Businesses, mostly, that have labored under this have hailed it. But it's been castigated by the establishment politicians, establishment Republicans and Democrats alike. I've been hearing them. The global elites are all over it. And I'd say the earth-worshipping climate control gurus like Al Gore is actually going to go back and redo his movie, he says, to make the president look even worse than he has already attempted to make him. And the Pope has condemned it. So, Dave, What? Give me your thoughts on what happened yesterday and all of this response. It's extraordinary.
Well, number one, Sam, that's quite a list of people you're asking me to respond to. But let me say this. It is the fulfillment of a campaign promise, and it is also the right thing to do for the United States of America. If you know anything about that Paris Agreement, the president is stating the truth. We were the losers. The United States was the loser within that agreement. And just because a prior president negotiated that does not mean this president, because it is his sworn responsibility to protect, defend the United States of America. I believe he is attempting to do that. So him pulling out, I don't see as any kind of problem or breaking of an agreement. He didn't make the agreement. He sees it as what it is, a real problem for the United States. So, Sam, I love it. I'm excited about it, and I think it's going to unleash American business in a way we've not seen it unleashed in quite some time.
Well, Leo Homan, editor of WorldNet Daily, I'm going to bring you in a little early, formally introduce you more in the next segment, but the global elite have gone berserk. They're saying that what the president has done is actually this and other things. He's threatening the global order, what they want, the one world government. The Bilderbergers, one world group, actually meeting in Chantilly, Virginia. In a week or two, they've issued statements that President Trump is destroying the world government gains made during the Bush years and accelerated by Barack Obama. In your opinion, why is the global elite so upset at the president and particularly at this decision to walk away from this Paris Climate Treaty, which, frankly, Barack Obama entered into illegally in the first place?
Absolutely, unconstitutionally and illegally. If we're going to enter into something like this, which is a treaty with a foreign body and foreign governments, it should have gone through the Congress and should have been approved by the Senate, like all treaties according to our Constitution. However, make no mistake, Sam, this Paris climate deal has zero to do with the environment or protecting the environment, and everything to do with advancing, as you said, the agenda of the globalist and of global governance. And what it really was all about was stacking the deck against the world's lone remaining superpower, the United States, and I mean that not just in a military sense, but in an economic sense. It gave all sorts of subsidies and freebies to foreign third world dictators. That's why they were on board with it. It subsidized the green energy sector, which Europe is far more advanced in than the United States, with wind and solar and all these things that don't really make economic sense at this time because they're far more expensive to produce than coal and natural gas. So it subsidized corporate welfare in that sense, with all the corporations involved in Europe and wanting to get more involved in the United States in this in these other forms of energy, and it also undermines American sovereignty at the same time. So that's why you see the people on board with it that you've named. These are all the same players who've been pushing global governance for decades.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today, and this discussion is just a part of what we're going to cover in this program. We're going to go next into now something that's happened under the Trump administration, an increase in refugees that seems to go the opposite direction of what the president just did with the Paris Peace Treaty. We're going to find out more about that in this next segment with Leo Homan, our special guest, editor of WorldNet Daily, news editor.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr.
Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, yesterday, the president removed the United States from the Paris Accord climate agreement. And we were just talking off air. We'll make clear that wasn't a treaty. A lot of people using that word, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a treaty. It was an agreement, and as Leo Homan confirmed and said again, it was an illegal, unconstitutional agreement that the world's treating as law, and many in our Congress are treating as law, but the Congress never approved it, so it's not a treaty. So the president, frankly, said, forget that, we're going to do what's right. But boy, interesting to see the response. So, but last week, a Thursday ago, just almost a week before, late in the afternoon, someone from the State Department issued a notice to nine placement agencies, refugee resettlement agencies that they're called, six of them religious-based, three of them secular-based, that have been involved in resettling refugees and all that under the Obama administration, making millions of dollars, by the way. They were notified by the U.S. State Department that the administration had reopened the process, the spigot, and the fact that there were going to be an increase of refugees coming in. And the logical question by those who are looking, because it hasn't gotten much play in the news generally, is why? So we're going to talk to Leo Homan, who is an expert on these whole things, and has in his book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad, is the guy to talk with. Leo Homan, thanks for being with us today, and I formally welcome you to the program.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Let's go right here, Leo. There's been, as far as I am seeing, little commentary on what appears to be perhaps a contradiction, a reversal of policy by the Trump administration. Tell us briefly, if you can tell us and know, who authorized the reinstatement? Did it come from the White House? Did it come from the State Department? What did it actually say, and what is it going to mean in terms of refugees coming into this country?
Well, it came from the State Department, and somebody from the State Department leaked it to the New York Times, which wrote the story just as we were heading into the long Memorial Day weekend. And what it basically said was that the number of refugees, the spigot was going to be reopened, and the number of refugees which are in the holding tank waiting to enter the United States would more than double in the months starting next month, starting later this month now. So far, you know, it never did, the door never did close, as many people believe. Trump tried to put in a 120-day pause in refugee resettlement while he said he wanted to try to figure out how to vet them better. I personally think that they're unvettable, but he wasn't even able to do that, as you know, with the courts and whatnot. I believe he went about it in a ill-advised manner by putting it into an executive order. It did not need to go in an executive order, according to the Refugee Act of 1980. I don't know who advised him to do that, but all that did was give the courts an ability to get their nose under the tent, so to speak, federal court system, and hold it up, block it, We're waiting now for it to go to the Supreme Court, where we'll ultimately learn whether or not the executive order will be allowed to proceed. However, this latest bit of news is shocking to a lot of people. They don't even believe it's true, but it is. They are going to start increasing the number of refugees by several thousand per month, coming in from some of the most, as you know, dangerous areas of the world: Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Afghanistan, and such, Iraq as well. So far, under President, now you said who's responsible. This come down from the State Department. Rex Tillerson is the head of the State Department. He is the Secretary of State. So we have to assume that he has signed off on this. Something this major would not have happened without the Secretary of State approving it. And then from there, Secretary of State's answer to the President. So Donald Trump owns this policy. Whether or not he personally approved of it, he owns it. And unless he acts quickly to reverse it, it will start happening. I personally believe it's part of a deal. Donald Trump more than likely cut a deal with a lot of the big business corporate executives in this country. A lot of them wanted to continue in this climate deal that we talked about earlier. For various and sundry reasons, you know, Google, Microsoft, and several other, about a dozen large corporations came out publicly and stated they wanted us to remain in this climate, Paris climate deal. Well, President Trump did the right thing and pulled us out. But who knows what he gave in return for that? Perhaps it was the continued influx of refugees is one possibility, because we know large corporations love refugees. They employ them. They consider them a source of cheap labor. They're very big in the hotel industry, for instance, which Donald Trump himself has worked in. Bill Marriott is a big supporter of refugees. The food industry also is a big employer of refugees. All of the hospitality industry that supports the hotel and airports in this country, cab drivers, food service, they all love refugees. So that is why I am surmising that it's part of a deal. We'll give you the refugees, but we're not going to give you the climate deal.
Leo, let me ask you this. We all know now that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals basically has declared the president's proposed travel ban to be discriminatory. Yet late last night, he appealed to the United States Supreme Court to revive his temporary ban of people coming from majority Muslim countries. Is it possible that that is taking place because the president feels, if he is the consummate deal maker and has done what you were surmising that he did, is it possible that he thinks, well, I can stem the flow of these refugees coming into the country via the Supreme Court reviving my travel ban, and that way I can make the consummate deal and yet at the same time keep the country safe by limiting the number of refugees coming in?
That's all possible except for the last part, limiting the number of refugees coming in. He's not doing that. He's now opening the floodgates. And so while this could be a short-term deal, is what I was saying, that I'll continue with allowing the refugees in until the Supreme Court should rule in this case. And if the Supreme Court rules that my travel ban and my executive orders are constitutional, then, you know, all bets are off on the deal. But for now, I'm going to allow the refugees to keep coming at almost the same pace now as they were coming under President Obama. President Obama brought in 70,000 to 80,000 basically per year. Average of probably about 70,000 per year under his administration. Under this deal that was leaked to the New York Times, it would amount to 70,000 to 75,000 on an annual basis. So
now, Leo, this is an amazing thing. But let me put in, if I could, let me conjecture another possibility and tell me what you think. Under the Obama administration, the numbers were like 95, 96, whatever it was, percent of all of those who came in as refugees were Muslims. They were not.
Now, that's not exactly correct, Sam.
Okay. Okay. What was it then? Tell me that, but I want to ask you and put this forward. Is it a possibility that under the Trump administration that he actually could favor and bring in those who are truly Christian refugees? Is that a possibility?
Let's go back to the first question first. Under President Obama, 46% of all refugees that came to the United States were Muslim. 46-point-something%, almost half. Was an exceedingly large ratio historically. I think only 1 year since 2001 had the ratio been higher for Muslim refugees. But what you may have been thinking of when you used the term 96% was the country of Syria itself. Among Syrian refugees, 98% have been Muslim.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
That may be the confusion.
Yes, but, yes it was.
But at any rate, the number of Muslim refugees is under President Obama increasing. You're exactly correct. The overall percentage. We're yet to know how that's going to change drastically under Donald Trump. So far, since Donald Trump was inaugurated, about 16,000 refugees have entered the United States. And of that number, about 6,600 have been from Muslim-dominated areas. So a little less than half again, maybe 40%. I haven't worked the percentage. But slightly less, perhaps, than Obama, but still very, very high. And so all we know is what we've seen. We can't predict the future, but he could try to make that ratio less and less Muslim, you're correct, and perhaps more and more Christian and Yazidi and these types.
Well, interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go into a break here right now. One thing we do know, that the president has upped and opened the spigot, so increase in refugees are going to happen. We don't know what the mix is going to be. We don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do, what the president has asked to give him ability to change that. A lot to pray for, and that's exactly what we need to do. Now, when we come back after the break, we're going to continue with Leo Homan, news editor from WorldNet Daily, and we're going to talk about this. How imminent is a potential Manchester-type bombing here in the United States? And we are going to talk about the role of Islamic mosques in America as it may contribute to that.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are just joining this program, Stand in the Gap Today, we welcome you to it. We've already had a full half hour, and we're going to be charging ahead with this great information here in the second half. But whether you're listening in the car or on local radio, or you are listening via our new app, we encourage you, and we're glad that you are on board. And I encourage those of you, if you have not downloaded our app, please do that. I know that you will find it to be very convenient, as you'll be able to listen to this program or all of our programs at your convenience. Just link it up in your car when you drive through your Wi-Fi or there in your car, as we all generally do, and you can listen to it right there conveniently. We can send you, and we do send out a quick message alert every day about 2 hours before the program with the theme and the guest. So all of that's possible right there, and you can join us in partnering by giving to us online. I just want to state this: the Stand in the Gap Today is not supported by large donors. This is a ministry and an outworking of the American Pastors Network. And we do this because we are committed to telling the truth with a biblical worldview that's constitutionally committed and consistent. You don't find this any other program. We need your help. I want you to know that we survive only by your gifts. So go there and do that online at standinthegapradio.com. Partner with us or download your app. Just put in Stand in the Gap in your app store. You can do that for free. All right, Leo Homan, let me go back and jump back in with you on this. We said on the last segment that we're going to talk about, answer this question, is an imminent U.S. Manchester-type bombing on the horizon in America? We saw what happened over there. And we're in the month of Ramadan. Just yesterday, June the 1st, there were five Islamic bombings across the world. Today, on June the 2nd, there have already been two. Every day, there is at least one, and there are many, many more. Let me start right out with you. A lot of things happening. The media's not telling us a whole lot. How imminent do you think a Manchester-type England bombing here is in the United States?
Well, I mean, if you'd asked the same question in the UK a few weeks ago, they would have said, oh, we have no problem. You know, we may have had a lone wolf recently who drove a truck over the Westminster Bridge and killed a few people. But, you know, that's just not a major thing. And it wasn't because of Islam, or, you know, he was probably mentally ill or mentally challenged. Of course, all lies. We've seen the same type of smaller attacks here in the United States, many of them since 9/11, and some of them weren't exactly small. When you talk about Orlando, 49 people being killed, and San Bernardino, 14 people being killed. You know, let's see, that was 1 year ago in Orlando, a couple of years ago in San Bernardino. These things tend to happen around Christian holidays like Christmas in San Bernardino, and Muslim holidays of Ramadan especially are extremely violent. And lo and behold, after Manchester, the British government comes out and tells us that they have 23,000 known jihadis living in their country, but only about 3,000 of those were considered the core of the worst of the worst, so to speak. And because this young man, Salman Abedi, however you pronounce it, was not one of the 3,000, they had him on their radar, but they didn't think that he was one of the ticking time bombs. He was one of the 23,000, but he was not one of the 3,000 that they considered the worst. So they didn't think that anything was imminent. And so you ask the question about what's imminent. You know, who can tell what's imminent? Because you have all these jihadis which have been imported into our country just the same exact way that they've been imported into the United Kingdom. And any one of them could go off at any time. And we've had plenty of evidence that they are preparing, they're arming up, they're purchasing, stockpiling weapons, often military-grade weapons, and so this could be very imminent for all we know, but it's already happened, so we shouldn't even make it sound like it would be something new if it does. Sam, you know, what else can we say?
Leo, let me ask you this. As you well know, we posted a billboard here in North Carolina that drew attention to the 9/11 attacks in trying to help people understand that the problem here is Islamic ideology. It is not a peaceful religion that's been hijacked by a few extremists. And yet, you know, Leo, the message that you're trying to communicate, the message we're trying to communicate for the good of our country, seems to be being lost amidst all of this political correctness. For example, you cited the gentleman who drove his vehicle, I think, across the bridge there in London, a bridge I've been across many, many times. He mows people down. He's shouting Allahu Akbar. And yet immediately the authorities say, yes, we know he was shouting that, but he didn't really mean that. And they minimize the comments and try to correct the jihadist himself and try to say, well, his motivation was really this, when the jihadist, before he was taken down, said it was this. How do you combat that when the media, when tragically far too many of the general public are just absolutely ignoring what is glaringly in front of us?
You're absolutely right. If it's an attack in a non-Western country like the Philippines or Egypt, you know, they've been attacking Christians for months on end in Egypt. The Coptic Christians, 29 killed a couple of months ago at two different churches. You know, another several dozen killed just the other day in a bus attack where they literally had them pull out their ID certificates, and if it said they were Christian on these IDs, they asked them to repeat the Shahada, which is the Islamic conversion prayer. And of course, these cops refused, and they were butchered on the spot. Now, those type of jihadist attacks against Christians and tourists in far-off lands are hardly given a mention here in the United States. And when that attack does occur in the West, like this Manchester attack and the bridge attack before that, they can't deny or ignore those, so they try to go into downplay mode. Like you said, anything but Islam is the reason. In fact, the latest tactic is to actually blame the victims. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently said that the rise in terrorism across the globe is being fueled by Islamophobia. So it's our fault that they're killing us. If we're being attacked on our soil, it's because we're too Islamophobic. It's a case of Stockholm Syndrome. You know, blame the victim. And identify with your enemy. It's twisted. It's absolutely evil. But this is what we're seeing play out on a daily basis with these bizarre comments coming from our government leaders and from our media. After every attack, it's the same thing. The CARE and the Muslim groups start whining about Islamophobia, and then the people in the law enforcement community and the political elite start saying that, we need to protect our Muslims. This is not Islam. This is a perversion of Islam that you see going on here with these attacks.
All right, Leo, let's get right in here because I want to cover this topic here next, because a lot of this propaganda stuff, as you're saying, victim blaming, and if it wasn't for Islamophobia, these attacks wouldn't happen, all that kind of stuff. Then others say, we don't know what ticked them off, you know, something on the media, some little media, a clip that somebody played, all of that kind of thing. But you can't get away with the fact that there are now over 3,000 Islamic mosques in the United States. And the UK and Europe are full of them. The mosques are doing something. They're either contributing to those who go there by telling them, do not act this way, do not murder innocent people, do not attack, or they are doing just the opposite. Tell us from your experience, what is the role of the mosque in jihadism?
Well, for starters, we have to understand the language of Islam. When they say, do not murder innocent people, they may say that, and the Quran may say that. It does say that in one place, in fact. But to the Islamic mindset, anyone who's not Muslim is not innocent. So there, right there, you know, that's why they can say we're against terrorism as well. Because killing an infidel is not seen as terrorism. These are soldiers of Allah doing what is commanded of them in the Quran and following the example of their prophet Muhammad, and what is written about him in the Hadith, so this is a world of peace for them. You have two worlds in the Islamic mind: the house of war and the house of peace. If you're in the non-Islamic world, you're in the house of war. And so, these we have to ask them to define their terms, and even then we're subject to lies because they will say different things to different people in a form of taqiyya, which the Quran allows, lying by Muslims if it is to advance Islam or to protect Muslims. And if you're a small minority in a country like the United States, you have to be careful about what you say, right? And so you're allowed to lie. And so we sit down with these Muslim leaders and we make nice with them, believing everything they tell us and lapping it up, and it's all a bunch of lies. Yes,
ladies,
we do have a problem with the mosque.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue now as we go into the solution segment with Leo Homan. He's talking about lies, talking about taqiyya, talking about what the Quran and Muhammad actually says, the necessity to define terms. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about one or two of the biggest lies that Islam is using to convince and deceive Americans and American Christians, how to recognize it and how to respond to it. So stay with us as we go now into the solutions segment, identifying and responding to the biggest Islamic lies.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, now we're going to swing into our solution segment. We try to bring up the issues of the day. That's what this program's all about. We try to address every one of the current issues of the day from a biblical perspective, and where it touches on the Constitution, to make sure that that element is also approached appropriately. We don't try to bring up questions and let you hang. On this program, we know that the Word of God has answers to every issue. That's what a biblical worldview is all about. We understand that, and we try to make sure that that happens. And so our solution segment is really an attempt to take key issues that confront us, all of us, we see it in the news, and then to bring a little bit of clarity to otherwise great confusion. Now, one of those we were just talking about is the fact that in the Quran, in the words of Muhammad, practice called taqiyya, meaning lying, legitimate lying to non-Muslims, is not only acceptable, it's really commanded in the furtherance of Islam, the goal meaning submission, not peace. That's the definition. It's submission, as their goal is to subdue the entire world so that the entire world falls on its face to Allah. That is their God. Well, the lies that are being foisted upon us in this country, enabled by politically correct people in office and by the media, is enormous, actually reaching into Christendom itself. And I want to go to you, Leo, right now, because you have studied this quite well as we have, but I would like to know from you, in your opinion, what do you think is perhaps the most effective lie, deception, perpetrated by Islam, the Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, all of their work front, all taught in their Islamic mosques? What is that greatest lie that you find to be most effective in either silencing or fooling the American public, even some preachers? What would it be? How can we recognize it, and how should we address it?
Oh, that is an excellent question, Sam. And there are so many devious lies put out by CARE, you know. They tell us that whenever a terrorist act is committed that it has nothing to do with Islam. It's lie number one. The Islamists who commit the terrorist attacks tell us that it has everything to do with Islam. I guess we're not supposed to believe them. they tell us that not all Muslims are violent, and that's one of those very effective half-truths. You know, not all Muslims. Of course not all Muslims. Not all Germans were Nazis. Not all Russians were Bolsheviks. It didn't matter. The people with the ideology, with the money, and with the weapons are all that were relevant in the Bolshevik Revolution, in the Nazi wave that overtook Germany. So peaceful Muslims, while they do exist, are irrelevant. So that's one of those half-truths that's very, very effective. But perhaps the biggest and most insidious lie of all, and this is the one that gets many of our Christian pastors hooked in, sadly, is that Allah is the same God. Allah is the same God that we worship. We just view him in a little bit different way. You know, we see God as God the Father and Holy Spirit and God the Son, the Trinity. But Allah is really no different. And it's just a different way of looking at the exact same God. And this is just so harmful to our Christian churches, Sam, as you know. And, that great ancient Chinese military strategist, Sun Tzu, said, know your enemy and know yourself.
And Leo, let me...
The problem that we have in America right now, we don't see the enemy. We think he's just a clone of ourselves. He's no different. It's just another religion, a different past God, but not any different. And we don't know ourselves anymore either. We used to call ourselves, we wouldn't be ashamed to call ourselves a Christian nation, but now we don't want to use that label. So how can we win this battle if we don't know our enemy and we don't know ourselves?
Excellent comment, Leo. Let me make a comment, then ask a question. If peace is what Islam is, we of course know it is not. But if it were to be that, and the purveyors of that religion, the teachers of it, the imams, the clerics, if they are teaching the truth about Islam, then someone is not getting the message within the House of Islam, because the number of attacks now is almost 31,000 deaths that have been perpetrated at the hands of Islamic ideology since 9/11/01. I'd love to ask you to respond to this, Leo. Not only is this lie that we worship the same God, we just call him by a different name, this one has come up repeatedly in my presence and in my hearing in the last week, and that is this. The Muslims are quote-unquote people of the book. Mm-hmm. Christians are also people of the book. So what's the big deal? Would you mind addressing that?
Yeah. That's really unbelievable, because people of the book, they're talking about the Bible there, and the Muslims who engage us in these interfaith dialogues will say, oh, we revere the Bible. You know, you're people of the book. We also believe in the book, the Bible. The only problem is they see the Bible much differently than we do. They believe that the Bible has been corrupted. They do revere the apostles. But they believe that the New Testament was corrupted by later Christians, Paul especially. They have a lot of animosity toward. They believe that he corrupted the New Testament. They believe the Jews didn't get the Old Testament quite right. Yes, they believe in Abraham, and they use Jesus for the Christians to establish a, quote, common word and a common leader. We believe in Jesus, and they use Abraham for the Jewish community. We believe in Abraham. Well, it's not the same Jesus, and it's not the same Abraham. Jesus, to them, is not the Son of God. He did not die on the cross for our sins. He was a prophet who will return in the last days to convert the world to Islam, and he'll tell all the Christians that they got it wrong. They were fooled all these years. Their Bible's been corrupted, that he's a Muslim, and that they should convert. And if he doesn't, if they don't, then they risk losing their lives. But and then with the Jewish faith, they say we believe in Abraham. But what they don't say is, we don't believe that Abraham gave his blessing to Isaac. No, it went to Ishmael. Ishmael is the seed of blessing. Well, that's the Arab race and Islam, and isn't that convenient? So this is their people of the book. We need to start learning this, and we need to start asking further questions. And that's the problem. The pastors who are involved in these interfaith bridge-building dialogues refuse to ask the hard questions. I sat and listened recently to an interview between Bishop Greg Rickle, who's a bishop in the Episcopal Church in the state of Washington. And he sat down with a member of CARE, a female Muslim leader, and he let her rattle on about all this great stuff about Jesus and the Bible without pressing her on a single one of these issues.
And Leo Homan, I'm going to interject right now because we're going to wrap this up. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to define the terms, understand that the deception is there. Ask the question as it's being put out. Is Jesus God? Is Muhammad God? That's what they try to tell us. We're all under one God. Ladies and gentlemen, we normally wrap up this program in prayer. We have run out of time today. I hate that. I ask you, though, you take these matters you've heard to prayer before the Lord. In this weekend, study these things. Go to the Word of God. That's where the answers are found. Leo Homan, thank you for being with us today on Stand in the Gap today. Dave Kistler, thank you for being here with us as well. And ladies and gentlemen, go forward from this week. Understand the truth. Hold the truth. Stand in the gap for truth. God's Word, where you are.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission.